Welcome to another series in our podcast during this COVIDian crisis. We're experimenting with it and we'll see where it goes. Hopefully we will improve them as they go along. And for now, we will make do with what we have. As Chesterton once quipped, if something's worth doing, it's worth doing badly. And as I said before, that applies to many things, perhaps except brain surgery. And you could say probably flying an airplane with other people in it, which leads us into today's topic, which is risk. I was pondering this the other day in the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, which is known for many things. Obviously, the vision to the three young shepherd children on that fateful day in 1917, with the visions continuing on the 13th of every month, culminating with the exception of August when they were detained in jail. And the vision was delayed until the 19th of August. But then that final vision on October 13th with the dancing of the sun. And we may return to that topic in later discussions. But May 13th is also known, you know, historically for other things. The attempted assassination on the John Paul II in 1981, which he survived miraculously, as I wrote the other day. Aliaga was surprised that his bullet did not find his mark. And the Pope later said that another hand guided the bullet so that it missed all of his vital organs. And he later placed that bullet in the crown of the statue of Our Lady of Fatima. But less known probably to our listeners is the first successful ascent of Mount Everest without oxygen and without the help of the Sherpa guides by a woman, Alison Hargraves, who was 33 years old, and a mother of two. Now, this is a remarkable achievement. The first person to reach Everest without supplemental oxygen was Reinhold Messner. That was back on May the 8th of 1978. A remarkable achievement at the time. Mrs. Hargreaves wanted to one-up Meisner, actually three-up. Her goal in 1995 was to climb the three highest peaks in the world, unaided, all in one season, which was almost beyond human endurance and beyond human capability. But she might have been able to do it if the weather and everything had held up correctly. That is, the three peaks were Mount Everest, the infamous K2, which is in some ways harder to climb than Everest, even though it's just a little bit shorter. And then the other peak, Kangchenjunga, if I'm saying that correctly. And she began her quixotic attempt, perhaps quixotic, in that spring of 1995. She made it up Everest and was back. That was on May 13th, the celebratory day in 1995, but later that summer, on August the 13th, she did make it to the summit of K2. Some say foolishly she kept going to the top, or imprudently, with a massive storm blowing in, whether they knew of this or not. A number of climbers turned around, including the son of the famous Edmund Hillary, Peter Hillary, who saw the writing on the wall, or the writing in the sky, so to speak, and descended the mountain and barely escaped with his own life. While descending on from K2 on August the 13th, Alison and a number of others were met with one of the most violent storms of the season, with 240-kilometer winds, and they were quite literally blown off the mountain to their unfortunate deaths. Which brings us to the notion of risk. Now, Alison had climbed the north face of the Eiger, and if you remember, the Eiger is a notoriously difficult mountain as well. And there was a book written, The Eiger Sanction, made back in 1972, which was made into a film with Clint Eastwood in 1975, and part of the subplot of the book was the difficulty of climbing that north face, the sheer extent of it, one massive 1,000 feet high slab of granite. The thing is, Mrs. Hargreaves climbed that north face while 6 months pregnant with her son, Tom. Now, we'll get to Tom in a moment and his own risk-taking as an adult. But Allison left behind two small boys in 1985. They were still, Tom was about 7 years old, his younger brother was at four, and she is criticized for leaving those two children behind and taking such extensive risks. Now, some say this is a sexist remark because many male mountain climbers have left children behind, and the point is well taken. One could argue that young children need their mother more than their father. I'm not sure, but we'll leave it at that. And she's made whatever peace she's going to make with God. For now, let's return to the moment of to the question, sorry, of risk, and how and when and in what way are we as Catholics permitted to take risks? And you might see where I'm going with this if we compare Alison Hargreaves' attempt on Mount Everest with our attempt to go outside during the danger of a virus. We can see these two barely compare, but they do compare in some way. All analogies are somewhat similar, even if most analogies limp. In other words, is the, we might argue, imprudent risk of Alison Hargreaves trying to scale the three highest mountains in the world, leaving two small children at home and a husband, comparable to us going forth in the world as free and responsible people made in God's image to interact, socialize, and live, at least in some respects, in a normal way, without covering our faces with masks permanently, and for the rest of our lives or human existence, always maintaining 2 meter distance separation, and never singing in a choir with anyone to whom you are not already living in a family, as I read just this morning in guidelines for a certain diocese in Canada. So there goes polyphony, my dear readers or listeners. So let's look at what risk is and how we balance it. Life itself is a risk, if you think about it, as soon as we come into the world, from the moment of conception until our natural death. Death is quite literally always staring us in the face. We are but a heartbeat away from eternity, every moment of our lives. And we may choose at certain moments to increase or decrease that risk, depending on our own free decisions. And I would argue that most of those decisions should be left up to our own conscience, our own prudence, taking into account various factors, for example, the end or purpose of the action or the activity we choose to do or not to do, the level of skill we have in performing the action, how much of a risk is it really, and then what sort of danger does it pose to others? We place the notion of risk in the moral sphere. We say that really what we're doing is we're pondering is the principle of double effect, and that is we balance certain good, or the avoidance of a certain evil, with the attaining of a greater good, or the avoiding of a greater evil. People climb mountains, not just because they're there, but for the thrill of it, for the reputation, the prestige, having one's name in lights, so to speak. There's the personal achievement that one gains, the inner satisfaction, the inner sense of accomplishment. And those of us who don't climb mountains per se, but have been up, let's say, to certain areas where we might be exposed to a level of danger, there's nothing wrong with that. Driving down the street is itself quote-unquote dangerous, so is going for a bike ride, which I just did, so is doing anything really at all. Getting married is a risk, any sort of vocation is a risk. So risks are all around us, and life is risk. Now, we may argue that certain risks are disproportionate to the good attained, and one could argue the case for Mrs. Hargreaves, given what sort of harm she might have exposed her six-month-old child to, climbing the north face of the Eiger, and also climbing Mount Everest and K2 and others. That's extreme. Most of us are not exposed to such extreme levels of risk, which brings us to COVID and the virus. Now, you could argue about the risk of the virus, the epidemiological evidence coming in seems to imply that the virus does not imply a disproportionate risk for the vast, vast majority of the populace. For a small minority, there is a higher level of risk, and those risks must be balanced in the whole context of what we mean by life. I've heard commentators say, oh, people want to go take risks so we can go to restaurants. That's not really what it's about, is it? It's about living life itself, about what it means to exist on this planet, journeying towards heaven. And I've written before, quoting John Paul II, that this life is but a penultimate good to the ultimate good of eternal life. But our journey towards eternal life is filled with activities that we must do and perform, all everything from grocery shopping to music to restaurants to congregating together, and most of all, the liturgy and the Mass. Like I just mentioned, I read over the policies for a certain diocese in Canada for returning to Mass, and they seem rather extreme in some ways. Only 50 people are allowed in the church. No choirs are allowed in the choir loft unless they're all from the same family. And if they ever have choirs again, the members will have to be separated by plexiglass sheets or something. Now, here's my argument about all those sorts of things with masks and rubber gloves and 2 meter distancing. If the virus is that infectious, then everybody's going to be exposed to it eventually. So is the argument here that we're supposed to quote unquote flatten the curve? And it seems the curve has been flattened. Emergency rooms have never been emptier, and that's across the land, really. Then what's the point of maintaining these extreme measures ad infinitum with no end in sight? Arguing from the principle of risk, it seems to be the more prudent course to isolate, to some extent, those who are at great risk, particularly those in nursing homes with comorbid conditions, who are octo or nonagenarians, who may indeed be at some level of risk from this virus in a morbid way. But for the rest of us in the common populace, the level of fear and irrational fear, paralyzing fear, is going to, and already has, debilitated society in a way that is rather remarkable and I don't think can continue. Going outside in these conditions is not climbing Mount Everest, not anywhere close. It is a risk level that I think we're going to have to manage and maintain in a way that is prudent, but does not debilitate us into a fear that paralyzes our capacity to live and to interact. On either end of the spectrum, that is sheltering in place in one's home forever and ever, or just going full hog into life normal, circa February 2019, I would argue for something closer to the latter than the former. Maybe not full bore. Obviously, we have to make some precautions, but what's being done seems itself imprudent on the other end of the spectrum. I'll conclude these thoughts with a final sort of tragic note, that is that Alison Hargreaves' son, the 6-month-old little baby who inadvertently or unwittingly climbed the north face of the Eiger, himself met a tragic end similar to his mother just last year, 2019, where he and a companion were climbing a mountain not far from where Alison Hargreaves met her end, descending K2 on Mount Nanga Parbat, the end of February 2019. The last communication was February 24th, and eventually their bodies were found. Tragic ending, tragic story, but we may hope that they made their peace with God somehow in those last tragic moments, doing, as people say, what they loved. So risk is all around us, and let us embrace it as we must, with courage, with hope, with faith. So be of good cheer, for Christ has overcome the world.